Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want to invite you to open in your New Testament to John chapter 13. John chapter 13. I want to begin this morning with a question for you. If you knew that your life was going to come to an end tomorrow, how would you want to spend the rest of your day today? Yeah, I'd want to talk with the people who are dearest with me. I'd want to talk with my family. And I would want to say things to them that I would never have another chance to say to them. I'd want to communicate my love for them. I'd want to emphasize some things that are important that I would want them to remember. And the truth is, I suspect that most of us would do basically that same thing if we knew that death was imminent. And yet we recognize that most of us are probably not going to know which day will be our last. But what we see in the Gospels is that Jesus did know. He knew precisely when he was going to die. And the night before he was crucified, he spent some time with his apostles, with the disciples. And these are men who had been with him for more than 3 years at this point, really closer to about 3.5 years. And they were, for all practical purposes, his family. I mean, he loved them dearly. And there were some things that he wanted them to understand in light of the events that were about to take place. And what I want us to talk about in our study this morning is one of those things that he was trying to get across to them here in John chapter 13. And so let's begin reading John 13 verse 1. It says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which that was wrapped around him. And he came to Simon Peter, who said to him, 'Lord, do you wash my feet?' And Jesus answered him, 'What I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand.' And Peter said to him, 'You shall never wash my feet.' And Jesus answered him, 'If I do not wash you, you have no share with me.' And Simon Peter said to him, 'Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head.' And Jesus said to him, 'The one who is bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you.' For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, 'Not all of you are clean.' When he had washed their feet and put out on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, 'Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." First thing I want us to do in our study as we look at this passage, before we talk about what Jesus did, is I want to talk about some things that Jesus knew as he went into this evening and as he said these things to his disciples. And there are several things we could mention along those lines. And the first observation, although really it's already come up even in the introduction of the lesson, is that Jesus knew the reality of the cross at this point. In other words, he knew that the time had come for him to depart out of this world, as it says there in verse 1, to go and to be with the Father. He knew that he was about to die. Not a surprise to him. He was aware of the plans that had already been made for him by the rulers of the Jews. They had wanted to put Jesus to death for a long time at this point. And now it was time, according to God's plan, for them to finally succeed in doing that. And so Jesus understood that. And if there's one thing that we can say about the death of Jesus, one thing that we ought to recognize about the death of Jesus, it's that his death was voluntary. If it had not been his intention to die, there would have been nothing that these men, that the rulers of the Jews could have done in all of their plotting and all of their planning. Nothing could have accomplished that end save for the fact that Jesus laid down his life. He would say it in John chapter 10 and verse 18. He would put it this way: no one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. In other words, I have chosen to do that. And so Jesus knew the reality of the cross, and he submitted to that. It was something that he voluntarily went to. But a second thing along these lines that Jesus knew is he knew the identity of the one who was going to betray him. You ever thought about the fact that Jesus knew all along that Judas was the one who was going to betray him? In fact, by the time we get to this point, Judas has already conspired with the chief priests, and he's already made these arrangements, and he was simply waiting for a convenient time to carry out what he had agreed with them to do. Have you ever wondered what motivated Judas to do that? I mean, each of the Gospels tells us something about the betrayal of Judas, but none of them really say, and here's why he did what he did. We know from other passages, back in John chapter 12, actually, in the chapter just prior, we're told there that Judas was greedy. In fact, in verse 6, it says that he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. And so we know that maybe some of that was going on, but I don't think that was the only reason for what Judas did. When you look at it in the whole scheme of things, 30 pieces of silver wasn't really that significant amount of money. And so I doubt money was the only reason for why Judas did what he did. It seems to me that he may have made the decision to betray Jesus really only a day or two before his death. It's not really something he had been planning to do all along. And some have suggested that maybe he came to the point where he simply, you know, saw Jesus not as the kind of Messiah that he was looking for. You know, he was looking for a worldly kingdom. And it became obvious that Jesus wasn't really interested in the same kind of thing. I don't know if that was what went through his mind, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was. But whatever the reason, it's remarkable to me that a person could be in the presence of Jesus as much as Judas was in the presence of Jesus. Again, for about the last 3.5 years, he has spent almost all of his time with Jesus and watching him perform the miracles that he performed and listening to those words that we can only read off of a page. And seeing Jesus interact with people and interacting with him himself. Yet he's not really affected by all of that. He's been with him from the beginning. He's witnessed everything the other apostles had witnessed. And it didn't do him any good. And what that tells us is that someone can appear to be close to Jesus and yet not really be one of his disciples. And the Lord knows when that's the case. But there's a third observation I want you to see. Jesus knew also the destiny that his destiny was to be with the Father. Yes, he knew he was going to the cross, and he knew who was going to betray him, but he also knew that that wasn't going to be the end of the story. He was going back to where he came from. He was going back to the Father. You know, Jesus tried to tell the disciples later that very night what he himself knew. But do you remember how they responded to all of that? It wasn't what they wanted to hear. And their response seems to have been characterized, you know, partly by grief and partly by confusion. They didn't really understand what the Lord was trying to say to them, but they knew it didn't sound good. And so when you read in John chapter 16 and you look at verse 16 and following, Jesus would tell them there, a little while and you will see me no longer. And again, a little while and you will see me. And so some of the disciples said to one another, what is this that he says to us? A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me, and because I'm going to the Father. And so they were saying, what does he mean by a little while? We do not know what he's talking about. And Jesus knew that they wanted to ask him, and so he said to them, is this what you're asking yourselves, what I mean by saying a little while and you will not see me, and again a little while and you will see me? Truly, truly, I say to you, you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will turn into joy. When a woman is giving birth, she has sorrow because her hour has come. But when she has delivered the baby, she no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. So also you have sorrow now. But I will see you again, and your hearts will rejoice. And no one will take your joy from you, Jesus said. They were confused by all of that. How should the disciples have responded to the things that Jesus was telling them? A little bit earlier in the evening, Jesus had said to them back in John 14 and verse 28, you heard me say I'm going away and I will come to you. If you loved me, Jesus said, you would have rejoiced because I'm going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. And so the fact that Jesus was going back to the Father, not a cause for sorrow, it was a cause for joy if they were concerned about him. For Jesus to go back to the Father meant that he would once again have the glory that he had had before the foundation of the world, the glory that he had had from all eternity. In John chapter 17 and verse 1, again, this is all on the same evening that these things transpire, whether you're in chapter 13 or 14, 15, 16, 17, all of it. When Jesus had spoken these words, John 17 and verse 1, he lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that the Son may glorify you. And then a few verses later, down in verse 5, and now, Father, glorify me in your own presence with the glory that I had with you before the world existed. That's what Jesus was going back to. And so Jesus, as he looked at this situation, as he spent time with his disciples, he understood all of these things. He knew that the cross was just around the corner. They are in the shadow of the cross. It's going to happen the very next day. And he knew that Judas was going to be the one who would have a hand in bringing that to pass. And yet he knew that none of that was the end, that ultimately this would end with him in the presence of the Father with the glory that he had before the foundation of the world. Jesus knew all of that. But Jesus also knew that the disciples were in need of some things. And so he set about to take care of that very evening. And so let's talk a little bit about what Jesus did that night. We learn from Luke's account that the disciples had actually been arguing amongst themselves this very night in the presence of Jesus. And what they were arguing about, Luke tells us in Luke chapter 22 and verse 24, is about which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. Can you imagine that? And while they are evidently engaged in this, you know, most important of all discussions, you know, who's going to be greatest? Jesus gets up from supper and he prepares to wash their feet. Why did he do that? I mean, was it because their feet were dirty? In part, yeah. There was a need. Since the people of that time wore sandals and their feet got dirty when they walked the dirt roads of the ancient world, that was just a reality. And it was a common practice to wash your feet or to have them washed by a servant before you took your place around the table, and no one else was doing it, and so Jesus did it. So he did do it because there was a need, but there was another reason as well. And that reason is that the disciples were proud. They didn't understand the concept of being servants. You see, the disciples were more than willing to fight over which one of them was going to be regarded as greatest in the kingdom. That was worth putting up a fight for. But no one was going to fight over the towel and the wash basin. And I wonder what went through their minds when the Lord got up from the table and started washing their feet. You wonder if they were ashamed by that? That they hadn't gotten up and done that first, that the Lord had to resort to doing that? You hear, we have the Son of God washing the feet of the men who were supposed to be his servants. And one thing that is absolutely incredible is the fact that Jesus apparently even washed the feet of the man who was about to betray him. And he knew it. How's that for loving your enemy? Could you have done that? And what Jesus was trying to do was set an example for these men. He was showing them what he wanted from them, because they apparently had not grasped the fact that he had called them to be servants, to wash feet if necessary. As he says there in verse 15 of our text in John 13, I have given you an example that you should also do just as I have done to you. And we need to recognize the Lord wasn't trying to institute a ceremony here of some kind or an act of worship that his disciples were to engage in, you know, throughout the ages when he washed the disciples' feet. And that's why I highlighted that in part when he washed their feet, he was doing it, yes, because they were dirty. This is not just something he did out of the blue for no reason whatsoever. There was a need here, and that's what was going on. That's the context. But washing feet was the task of a servant, and that's what he was trying to get across to them. He was saying to them, I want you to have the attitude of a servant, and I want you to stop arguing with one another about which of you should be regarded as the greatest. You've missed the point of what it means to be my disciples, to be the men that I've chosen to be apostles even. He wanted them to recognize the need to serve. And you know what? There's a good chance that most of us who are here this morning that we already knew what this passage was about before we even began to look at it. I mean, when we started reading it, you didn't think to yourself, man, I really just don't know what's going on there. You know, it's not one of the difficult passages in the New Testament. And many Christians have heard sermons and they've heard classes that have dealt with this passage and its meaning, really for their entire lives. Not everybody, but some of us have. And so the real question for us becomes this. Are we doing what Jesus said his disciples should do? Are we serving people? Are we too proud to do that or too selfish to do that? Those are important questions for us to ask. Now, I'm not sure that Jesus was telling the disciples anything new here when he said to them in verse 17, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I think he may have been implying that they did already know them, at least in principle. They had certainly heard the Lord talk about serving others. I mean, you can't help but get that when you read what Jesus said. Can you imagine being with him all the time that he spoke those things? You would have heard a few things about serving other people in the words of Jesus, but evidently they hadn't taken all of that to heart, not entirely, at least. And the problem was not so much with, you know, learning, it was with living. They knew what the Lord taught. They had been with him again for a long time, but they weren't living like it. And I want to suggest to you that most of the things that we talk about from week to week, most of the things that we deal with in sermons and classes, I've said this before, are things that we've heard before, most of us. I mean, there may be people for whom it is new, and it's been new for all of us at some point in time, but for many of us, we have known these principles for years. And as I said a moment ago, you knew the main point of the lesson this morning as soon as we read the text. You knew what that was all about. You already know that we're supposed to be servants, don't you? I know that already. We all know that. And so the question is not simply whether or not we know it, but whether or not we're doing it. And Jesus didn't say here, as he wrapped it all up, blessed are you if you know these things. Sometimes we act like that's what Jesus said. But what he actually said is, if you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. And truth is, there's a difference. Now, before we bring the lesson to a close this morning, I want us to talk a little bit about what we can learn. I mean, we've already talked about some things that we can learn from all of this, but I want to make three observations this morning that all have to do with serving others. Three important things that I think we need to recognize about the life of a servant. And the first one that I want us to see is that the serving lifestyle reveals a sense of identity. You see, Jesus could do what he did on this occasion because he knew who he was and he knew why he was here. In Matthew chapter 20 and verse 28, he would say about himself, the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. I mean, he said, that's just a fact of who I am. And if we're ever going to be the kind of people the Lord wants us to be as his disciples, whether it's with regard to serving other people or any other area of discipleship, we need to get it settled in our minds who we are and why we are here. Because we sometimes lose sight of that, don't we? Many people are willing to serve others when it's a convenient sort of thing. But let me point out that's not the kind of service that we're talking about this morning. I think any of us can serve others as long as, you know, we can say, let me write that down on my schedule and make some plans for it. Maybe you have to even rearrange one or two minor things to get to that point. But let me remind you that the people don't just have needs at convenient times. And it may be that a need arises at supper. It did for Jesus. It may be that a need arises in the middle of the night. It seems to work that way on occasion. And the truth is that we will only be servants at those times if we've come to terms with the fact that this is who we are and this is why we're here. And so the serving lifestyle reveals a sense of identity. It tells us a lot about who we are. The second thing I want to point out is that the serving lifestyle requires a sense of humility. And one thing we can see in this passage is that the best kind of service is service that is unannounced. I mean, did you notice that Jesus didn't say a word to the disciples before washing their feet? He didn't, you know, get up and go, okay, fine. So nobody else is going to do it. I guess I'll have to wash your feet since you're not going to be servants. He didn't say a word to them. He just got up from the table and he prepared himself to serve. What an example he set. And the truth of the matter is that the Lord doesn't want us to be like the hypocrites of his day who would sound a trumpet before them when they wanted to do something good. Do you remember the words of Matthew chapter 6 in the middle of the Sermon on the Mount? Jesus would talk about that kind of stuff. He would say, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you, he says. That's how it needs to be. And so he doesn't want people who are looking for the television cameras, you know, when they want to do something good or for the, you know, the kind of attention they get from other people. He doesn't want us to make sure that we've got our camera ready so that we can capture the moment, so that we can put a post on Facebook. That's not the kind of service that we're talking about. He just wants us to be sensitive to the needs of people and then to quietly take care of them when we have the opportunity to do so. And we ought not be concerned about the attention that we'll get, but rather about the good that we can do. And I'll just tell you, that takes humility. And then the final thing I want to point out is that the serving lifestyle results in a sense of tranquility. I don't know that most people would equate service with tranquility. When people of the world think about someone choosing to live his or her life in service to others, I suspect they would view that more as insanity than tranquility. And they may pay lip service to people who do that kind of thing, but can't figure out why anybody would actually go about doing so. And the truth is, we live in a world where people tend to measure themselves by how many people serve them. I mean, isn't that usually how that goes? And the world considers people fortunate who have others who are there to meet their needs, to do things for them. But that's not what Jesus said. He said that the quality and the blessedness of our lives is dependent, at least in part, on serving others. That's the concept in verse 17. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. There's a certain kind of happiness, in other words, or a certain kind of satisfaction that comes from living this sort of life. And I'm not sure if Jesus had a future state of blessedness in mind here, if he's talking about something that is experienced here and now, things like fulfillment and tranquility, and the statement's true really either way. Because the way you find true fulfillment in this world and really in the one to come is to do what you know you ought to do. And that includes being a servant to other people. And so there's no doubt in my mind that we know these things. We understand these principles. And again, the question for us is, are we doing these things? How do we respond when we're faced with the needs of other people? And we have a choice at that point. We can choose to serve them or we can choose not to. We can choose to throw in the towel or we can choose to pick it up and wash feet. But when we look at what Jesus said, I know which one we'll pick if we're truly disciples of Christ. And what we need to do this morning is we need to examine our lives in the light of His and recognize that, yes, Jesus measures His servants by feet. It may be that we have someone in the audience this morning who has never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, has never become one of His disciples. You may recognize the need this morning to become one. Maybe that we have somebody who is watching this morning over the live stream who's in that same position. So if you are here this morning and you recognize that need, we want you to not put off that, not delay that at all. But if you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, but you do believe He is the Son of God, and you recognize that sin is not His will for you, and you're willing to set all of that aside to confess the name of Jesus before others, we want to encourage you to come this morning to be buried with Christ in baptism so that you can be raised up to have a new life. And if you're watching this morning on our live stream, we don't want you to delay either. We want to encourage you to contact us, and we'll find a way to make that happen as soon as we possibly can. But don't delay. If there's some other need that you have that we can help you meet as you grow in your relationship with the Lord, we want to help you with that as well. And so we would ask you, if you're here, you have one of those needs, that you come as we stand and as we sing. Make me a servant.